Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Glad to have you with us. I'm Cassidy, and as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Dibs.
Hey guys.
This week, we are continuing our foray into season two of The Legend of Vox Machina. So last week, we covered episodes 1 to 4 of season two, and this week, we're doing some of my favorite episodes of season two, episodes 5 through 8, which is where there's a ton of cool stuff, a lot of really cool action sequences,
And a
and
lot
some
of
really
dumb
cool,
stuff too. Let's not
well,
get ooh.
dumb stuff too, but also some really cool reveals that I'm looking forward to talking about because I don't know,
Yes.
I just it was really cool, and this show has been my new obsession. So, I apologize in advance for how crazy this episode may get because I think we both have a lot of things we want to talk about and a lot of things we want to say.
Absolutely. So let's talk about this because there's a lot going on here because we find out a lot about Keyleth, and I love how it starts with a flashback, and it's extra special to me because to both of us, let's not get it wrong, because of the voice actor who plays Keyleth's mom.
Yeah, that was a really cool callback.
Very
Getting Jenna Varney
special.
to be the voice of Vilya. And also, I just think
Yes.
it like that on its own is just cool because like she's amazing at what she does. But also just
Is.
because I think Marisha confirmed that a lot of, I guess, the design for Keyleth and also like I guess in terms of her skill set, like she drew inspiration from Avatar and Legend of Korra. So I thought that was really cool that like they got it. The voice of Korra to be in the show and then to have like
Yes.
that connection to the character that was inspired by that, I thought was really cool. But it's also bittersweet because like Vilya's on screen for maybe like 5 seconds
Five
and then you don't really see
seconds.
her. Yeah, it's it is very bittersweet because it's like you get to see like that really sweet scene with like them as a family and then
Yes.
She goes on her journey and then she's never heard from again or never seen again. And so like that's probably like for such a like Keyleth was fairly young when that happened. I don't know if an age was
He's a
ever
little
given,
baby.
but yeah, to like kind of in a way witness that and then have that like stick with you for your whole life, that's like
Yeah.
it's probably really hard to process at such a young age, and then like the older she got, obviously it became very important to her to like succeed where her mother failed. And it's not even so much a failure, I guess. It's like we just don't really know what
We don't know
happened.
what happened exactly. Don't say that. Baby is fine. I have problems, okay? Because it's Janet Varney. Okay, that's all I can say, right? But I can't. I just can't. It's Korra. To me, that's Korra. So I can't. Anyway, we're talking about Keyleth now, so well.
I mean, she, like I said, I think there was some inspiration drawn from both shows. So I think it's, again, I just thought it was really cool that they even got her to like be a part of the cast. But I mean, they like we've said this before, but like there's just they have so many really cool people on the cast that
Yes.
literally like every random character is just like somebody that's in something that we've seen or is
Know
well known for
about.
something, and I think that's really cool. And then there's Matt, who just
Absolutely.
does like the voices of like everybody else, which I also think like I'm always just in awe of like how many voices can he do and like how many
Well,
is he doing?
Dee Bradley Baker and Gray can attest to how many voices they can do, so why not him? You know?
Yeah, but I think, I mean, I know Dee Bradley Baker does a lot of like the animal effects and stuff, but
Yeah.
like within a show, I mean, I don't know that they do like that many voices within a show because, I mean, I could be wrong, but like it always, like the impression I got was like they're usually booked on a couple of different gigs at a time usually. And I don't know if that's 100% true, but that was the impression that I got. So it's like their time on a given show is probably limited. But it's like if you look at the credits, it's like everybody is voicing like either like they're the main characters or like one or two NPCs, and then there's Matt who just has like a string of like background characters, and he's just doing like minimum 10, 20 voices an episode. So I always think like that's really funny, but also just really interesting. But I mean, again, they're professionals and they're all so good at what they do, and it's really fun when even like the minor characters like Villiar, like they're so memorable because like you know those actors from other things, and getting to see them in this show is so cool.
It's
So yeah, I
great.
know we're still like geeking out over Janet Varney being
Of
in
course,
the
because
show.
Tana Vardy, it's Quora. She's amazing. That's all I can say. Because if anything, okay, here's the thing, right? Because voice actors do not get enough credit, or I because in the sense that they make these characters, they breathe life into them, and 90% of why I love Quora is the little shit that she is, and I say that out of love. Okay, I say that out of love because I love her to pieces. I would. She's one of my favorite characters. That's all I can say. But the reason she is that way is because Janet gave her that voice, and I love that. That's pretty much it for me at this point.
I also think there's something really like fascinating about just voice actors in general. I think you're right in that like they usually don't get a lot of credit unless you're into animation or
Yeah, that's very
I think
true.
following a specific person's career or
Oh
just
yeah,
like them in general.
absolutely.
But I always think it's so interesting that a lot of times it's just people speaking. Like they're not putting on like an effect for the voice. Like they're just talking in their normal voice, but like somehow still they're able to like bring these characters to life
That's why
and
I
just make
feel
them
like it
sound so
takes
cool and
more
play out so cool.
effort. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, like the opening 5 minutes, just like as soon as she walked on screen, I was like, I know that voice.
I know that
I know
voice.
who that
That's
is.
Cora. Why is she here? What's going on?
Well, I knew she was in it because I think they had done like a promotional thing where they listed a couple different people who were like minor characters, and so they like listed Janet in one, and then Robbie Daymond is also
Oh,
in
yeah.
Pass Through Fire, which was really cool because they got like they had people from other campaigns come in, so
Yeah.
like Anjali was she was a priestess in the temple that Pike went to in season one,
Oh,
and she
yeah.
was an EXU. And then Amy Carrera was like a random background Ashari kid or person in this episode. And then Robbie's in this episode as well. And then, of course, you know, like Matt and Liam and Ashley, like they're part of like the main
Part of the
characters.
main cast. So, yeah.
So it was like really
No.
nice to kind of see them like bring together like actors from other campaigns, and yeah, it was really nice to see like the kind of reunions of sorts in like the voiceover booth. Not that we get like insight into the back, like the behind the scenes, but on screen, just like knowing that like all these people who had been on the show in different capacities, like whether they were guests or they were in like
Yeah.
spin-offs or whatever, like it was nice to see them back in the booth. So I always keep saying like they got most of the people now, they just need like others like Abria and just like
I'm
bring them
sure
into
they'll
the
make
show
it
as well.
happen. I'm sure they'll make it
I'm sure they
happen.
will. I'm sure they will. But I'm like, I needed it yesterday.
Yeah, we're impatient when it comes to that. Now, but let's talk about the context of the scene itself because I think it's really sweet. Because again, Vilya is just like, hey, it's okay, I'll be back soon, but she knows she won't be, but that's what she has to say that to her little kid, and the kid is and Keyleth is like, don't go, and it breaks your heart, it just breaks your heart, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if she knew at that point that she wouldn't be returning. I think that it was probably dangerous either way, and I'm sure there's always like a level of risk involved, but I don't actually know if she knew that she wasn't coming back, but I think
No,
like
but she knew
either
it was
way
going to
it's
take some time. Like, it's
yeah, I think like there's no fixed, or it doesn't seem like there's a fixed amount of time, so I would imagine that like yeah, at minimum she knew that it could potentially be a long journey and she might have to be away for extended periods of time, but I don't think anybody really thought that like she was just gonna go and then just never come back. And I think like obviously once that kind of became a reality, I'm sure it was really hard for Keyleth and her dad, because especially for Keyleth, I mean, she was so young at that time that it
He
was
was
like
little.
yeah, and like trying to like process that and like reconciling that your mom is gone and you might never see her again. And like it's worse, I guess, in some respects, because again, like they didn't know definitively, I think, that she was dead until later in the campaign. I think there may have been, I don't know if I'm not remembering correctly, but like there may have been something about like them getting confirmation that she was no longer alive, but like much later than like than when Billia initially went on her journey. So I think like all those years of not knowing is like in a way somehow worse, because when you don't know, you don't know. Like she could be alive, she could be dead,
There's
yet
still a
there's no way to know.
possibility.
Yeah, but when you know, even though it's like painful and like there's a finality to all of it, at least you know, and like you have an answer to the question, if that makes any sense.
I absolutely agree, but I love how Vilya talked to her. She was like, "It's okay, I'm gonna come back, but until then, you need to prepare for your own journey as well." And she's like, she basically shows her to listen to her power, and it's a really sweet thing. For me, it reminds me of what Cora would do, because she's in again, she's one of my favorite characters. Okay, I can't help it. It reminds me of what Cora would do if she were ever to tell some future kid of hers, "Hey, it's okay. I have to go for a while, but I'll be back. But you need to take care of yourself." That's what it would look like. It would be sweet. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely like I think it would be hard for everybody involved, and especially because again, like they nobody really knows like the exact time frame the RMNT would take, it seems like. And it's more, I guess, like I don't really know if this
I
is
don't know
accurate,
if there's a
because again, I
specific
haven't,
time frame. Go ahead.
well, yeah, no, I mean, I was just gonna say, because I haven't seen campaign one, so like I'm not super knowledgeable about specifics, but it seems more like it's like a test of like person's skill. So I don't really know at what point they somebody, whether it's a council or a given person or what, determines that like, okay, for this specific trial, like you've demonstrated enough skill, you pass. And I would imagine that would be subjective and it would vary from person to person. So I guess in theory, it could take as little time as possible to as long as you need to like finish it. And like because there's no set time frame, I would imagine that like it would be very difficult for a lot of people to like start their journey and like go on this quest, because again, theoretically, like it could take a week, I guess, if you could like complete everything really quickly and if you could get to places really quickly. Or like, I mean, I don't even know if it was ever mentioned how long Vilyas took, or like if that was ever like discovered that like it took her, I don't know, for example, like 3 months or something. Like that's just like a random example, but like I don't know if that was ever mentioned at any point.
No.
And I think it's also like bittersweet, because I think by not knowing, like you can kind of see how that impacted like Keyleth's Aramente, because like
Yes.
again, she's very powerful. She could
She,
probably
oh yeah.
like do, I mean, I'm like I don't know how to put this other than saying like when you watch her like actually use her abilities, it's like you're ready, like just try it, like you have nothing to lose at this point. But I think she's still
No.
so like nervous about like everything, especially after what happened to her mom, that like she's kind of holding back, I think, partly from nerves, maybe fear, whatever you want to call it. So it's like that aspect of it is kind of interesting, but also just bittersweet because it's like, again, she is very powerful and she is capable. It's not like,
Yes.
I mean, making mistakes is like a part of life and it's not like the
Yeah.
end of the world. I mean, like, yes, there will be consequences if you make mistakes in like a fairly like, you know, tough situation, but like it's a part of life, but you know, you can understand where she's coming from, but it's also like, as a viewer watching her, it's like, no, just go like do
Come
your thing
on,
because you're
do what you
capable.
can do. You know you can do this kind of thing. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, but again, it's like it's hard to fault her when you see what happens
No.
to her mom, and
Yeah.
then like she was so young when that happened that I'm sure that like that stuck with her and then just affected her for like the rest of her childhood.
Oh,
So
I
it's like
am
equal
sure.
parts like, please
Yeah.
just do your thing, Keyleth, because you can do it. And then also just like, no, it's okay. We understand like why you're hesitant to do anything, but like it's I don't know, it makes for like a very interesting character type. If that makes any sense, because a lot of
I
times,
know what
like,
you mean.
you see characters who are either like they're on a quest to like learn their abilities or like hone their abilities, or like they're already very powerful and they're very good at what they're doing. And like Keyleth is kind of somewhere in the middle where she's like, she has her moments like when she's in her element and she's like confident in herself and she's like doing all these amazing things, but a lot of times she's also just like very nervous and like hesitant and kind of holding back a little bit. And
Yep.
it's again understandable why she is, but it's also like sometimes it's just like you want to reach through the screen and just be like, no, do it, you can
Come
do
on,
it.
Keyleth, you can. But let's also talk about, because I think what this show is very good at is balancing out all of these characters' arcs and not just one character arc. So while Keyleth's arc is the most important in this particular episode, Grog is going through a crisis of his own at this point. Because I think we mentioned this like briefly when we were talking about
Getting
the
to the monk.
Briarwood arc. Yeah, exactly. Where Grog basically takes the Craven Edge, or the Craven Blade. Is that what that's
Craven
called?
Edge.
Yeah.
No, you're right the first time.
Yeah. From Silas, and unfortunately, he finds out what that sword feeds on. And that is not a good thing. Because it can cause a whole lot of problems, considering what that blade feeds on. So let's talk about that a little bit, and how
Yeah, I
that turns
mean,
into something else altogether, and how it builds up to something really cool towards the end of this season. So, yeah, let's talk about that.
that's like, I mean, any sort of like evil artifact or an artifact that's been used by somebody for nefarious purposes is probably not great, but Craven Edge in particular is like the type of thing you probably don't want to loot from a dead guy.
Yeah.
But it's also like when you look at it, it does kind of look cool, so you can't fault Grog for taking it. But yeah, I mean, I think like you mentioned, like the show does do a really good job of kind of balancing or like juggling different arcs at different times, because like you get a little bit of everybody in like, or everybody's arc kind of in a given episode. And so like even though certain episodes focus more on like one or two characters' arcs, you're still
Yep.
getting character development for all the other characters
Yes.
in various different ways. So like that part was really cool to see. But even an episode like this, where like you said, the focus was mostly on Keyleth, even like just like the little kind of like departures from like her portion of the story, like when it focused on Grog, or like even like Vax, and you know, him trying to like deal with everything that happened in the Sunken Tomb. Yeah, you get like I don't know, the show just somehow, like, for me anyway, I thought it found like a really good balance between like
Yes.
giving the most attention to Keyleth because it was kind of her episode, like this specific episode anyway, and then still kind of giving all the other characters time to shine. And like one of the things I loved is that like there's some pretty heavy stuff in this episode, like Keyleth kind of, you know, worrying about Pyra and all of that, and then
Yep.
Vax dealing with the Raven Queen and like wearing the Deathwalker's ward, and then like Grog and Pike in the Craven Edge. But then you also have like Vex and Scanlan just like fighting over a broom, and then just like being like, I mean, when you're friends, you kind of like, that's a thing you do, right? Like you annoy each
Ribbing
other.
each other. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
So like I loved like that balance of like you had a lot of heavy moments and stuff, but then it was also just kind of balanced out by like Vex and Scanlan just kind of being dumb and like fighting over a broom that was a cool broom because it could make you fly, but like it's also a broom and it's like, guys, maybe like prioritize other things right now. Like, I mean, again, it just added some levity and it was so much fun to like watch them kind of like goof off a little bit, because like you need that when you have heavy moments of like, you know, Grog having like these weird conversations with a blade that are leaning into like very dark territory, and then like, you know, Vax dealing again with like everything that happened in the Sunken Tomb, and then
Yep.
Keyleth trying to figure out like how can she save her sister tribe, but then also like
Get some news
keep going on this
about
quest.
I'll keep going on that quest, yes, but also get some news about her mother too, because that's also something that she wants to know about at this point. So yeah.
Right. Yeah, but it is really interesting though, because like, I mean, I don't know, Pass Through Fire had some of my favorite scenes the whole show, probably
Yes.
the whole show, if I'm being honest. But
No, I agree.
one of the
There's
things I
good
thought that was
reason
really
for that.
interesting,
Yeah.
well, there's so many good reasons, but like one of the things that I thought was really interesting was like, I think it's probably the first time you really see some sort of like, I don't want to say discord, but almost like disagreement, at least between Vax and Keyleth, because normally he's just like, I mean, they've got a thing. Neither of them are really like into acknowledging it, which is fine because they don't necessarily need to right away. But I think especially after the tomb and after, you know, getting the vestige
Yeah.
and kind of being stuck with it, I think Vax is just kind of in a very different headspace. And especially after
Oh,
seeing what
yeah.
happened to Amon and what the Chroma Conclave are capable of, he's like, we can't take any detours. We don't have time. Like, we have a path and we just have to stick to it. And it's not necessarily that Keyleth disagrees, but like, they're so close to the Fire Ashari, which is, you know, her sister tribe. It's the last place
Yes.
her mom was seen alive on her Armente. So it's like, she can't not just go and she can't sit back and not help. So there's that
Exactly.
scene where, like, initially when Scanlan's like telling them, like, the volcano is not dormant, she's like, we have to go help them. And Vax is like, we can't just detour every time somebody needs our help. And she, like, that's, I think, the first time she's kind of just like, you know what, screw it. I'm just gonna, like, do my
I'm
own
gonna
thing
go.
on
You
the
guys
street.
can do what you gotta do. I'm gonna go. Yeah.
So, like, I know that the show doesn't focus on that, like, specific scene for very long for a number of reasons, time constraints being one of them, but I thought it was really cool that, like, I mean, disagreement is a part of life, and like
Yeah.
and also like this is probably just like me and like I guess the shipper in me, which is kind of a dumb thing to say, but like there's that one scene where Pike is like, it's not just some people, like, or it's not just like these are her people, and like Vex is also like, you know, Keyleth would do like drop everything to help us, especially you. And the way Vex just is like, the expression on his face, he doesn't say it, but his expression says it, that's like, yeah, they have a point. Like that.
That's just one
I
part
know.
of it, but there's more happening here, because let's talk about what caused this issue in Pyra in the first place, right? Because the Chroma Conclave, and especially Thordak, tore through the veil and that's causing these monsters to come through now. These fire spirits to come through now from the fire plane. So that is a problem. But what I do absolutely love is how Keyleth deals with this, because it truly, it, you know what it reminds me of? And I don't want to keep bringing Korra into this, but I have to, because it's kind of like her skill set too. It reminds me of Cosmic Korra. I have to say it. It reminds me of Cosmic Korra at this point. Because what Keyleth does is she hears her mother's voice, and the way she's like, I was born to pass through fire, and she becomes this thing, this amazing fiery creature, literally, and it's like insane. But let's talk about Vax here, because this is like so dumb. This is like absolutely dumb, and I say this out of love, because they're idiots. They are absolute idiots. This woman basically goes into the fire plane, and the Vax's last words to her were like, "Kill it! What are you doing?" And then he just tries to go after her, and even his super speed is not fast enough to get him through. And he's just standing outside waiting, holding on to her staff.
On the one hand, that like the show like changed, because in campaign one, from what I know, and I could be wrong, but I think in the actual campaign he actually follows her into the fire plane, and like this is after I think like he like there was, if I remember correctly, there's something like he gets burned or something, and then for like a bit he's like kind of traumatized, and understandably so, by like lava or fire or whatever. But despite that, he still follows her into the fire plane, because he doesn't want her to go in on her own. So like, I'm on the one
that
hand,
that is ridiculous, and I hate them for it.
I'm kind of sad we didn't get that in the show, but then also I think like I
Obi God was still good. Okay, like it fed us.
I think the same thing happened in campaign one. Like she still turns into like that really cool like fire elemental type creature or spirit or whatever it is.
Whatever you want to call it. I don't know what the term for it is, but it is super cool.
Yeah, but I do like the version we got in the show too, and I think it was also really interesting, because I think during the season 2 watch party, I think somebody had asked Liam a question about that episode, and he I think said something about how it was kind of like Vax kind of needed to have that little scare a bit in a way, because his head was like so far up his ass for like the last couple of episodes that like. I mean, I'm not phrasing it all correctly, but Liam.
No, but I think he's been. I think I know what you mean. Sorry to interrupt, but I think I know what you mean, because he's been so consumed with becoming the champion of the Raven Queen. It's
in a way, yeah.
So, and not that that's not a heavy thing. It is, don't get me wrong. That is a heavy burden. But then he also has to understand that he's not the only one dealing with stuff. So like,
yeah, I think like that's part of, that's definitely like the Raven Queen, you know, angle kind of plays into it, because I think at this point he hasn't, I think, fully come to terms with or realized what being a champion entails. He's just wearing the vestige, and he knows that like he made a deal that's not ideal in the sense he doesn't really know what he signed up for.
Yeah.
And he knows like the bare minimum. But yeah, I think like you do kind of see like a personality shift in him after he starts wearing the vestige, where it's just like he just kind of more sullen, and again, understandably so, because nobody would, I would imagine, would want to wear armor for the rest of their life, even if it gave them like super speed or whatever.
I want to talk about that a little bit, because this is a bit of a callback to what Vax told his sister, like, I need you. You might not need me, but I need you. Do not go far from me. But now I think that dynamic has shifted a little, right? A little, because Vex is now seeing that Vax is just being a little bit reckless, just a little bit, and he's not exactly himself at this point. And you made a good point when we were talking about, I think this comes into play in another episode later in the season, where it's really abundantly clear that Vax is not listening to her when he normally would. And it worries her that this is, that he's going to do something stupid because of this at this point. So I, like you said, there is a personality shift. And yeah, I think it's
interesting because it's like, in some ways, between Vax and Vex, like, their dynamic somehow seems to shift but then also stays the same, because I don't think he's the type of person, I think if you gave him the chance to do it over, I don't think he would do it any differently. I think he would still make the same decisions, especially if it meant sparing Vex or saving her or preventing anything from happening to her. Yeah. But I think after he, you know, starts wearing the vestige, it's a lot to deal with. And again, he's not entirely sure, like, what he signed up for. I think he is in, like, a weird headspace. But then going into Pyra and then kind of seeing what Keyleth is dealing with. And then, like, it's also just, again, this might just be the shipper in me, which is kind of, I love, like, the weird angsty moments. I live for that sort of stuff. But it was really interesting. I thought that, like, their last interaction before Keyleth just kind of takes off and decides to just do whatever she can to help Pyra is, like, them kind of being in, like, sort of an argument. And then the next time he sees her, she's fighting, like, you know, these fire demons or whatever you want to call them, trying to close the rift. And yeah, then it's her literally just, like, jumping into the fire plane. And, like, I don't think anybody had prepared for that or thought that she would do it or that she even could do it.
Exactly.
But, like, she was also, I think, like, I mean, it was a super cool moment, especially the callback to what Velia said. But, like, as, like, putting yourself in the shoes of, like, another character, especially, like, Vax, that must have been a really, like, almost jarring moment, because if that was their last interaction, if, like, worst case scenario, if that had been their last interaction, they would have, like, ended or, like, left things on, like, somewhat of a sour note. Mm. And I think that's part of it. And then also, I mean, regardless of, I think, how their confession in season one went, I think he genuinely does. I mean, like, he already says that he loves her, and, like, obviously, I think,
you know, I'm in love with you, right? Dumbass!
I think after Vex, like, you know, she's probably the most important person to him right now. So obviously I would imagine that he doesn't want anything to happen to her or really any of, you know, the group, but in this moment, her specifically. So, like, that scene, I mean, when she's, like, jumping into the fire plane and he's just in the background, just, like, very worriedly going, like, "Keyleth, what are you doing?
Keyleth, what are you doing?"
And then, like, also just, like, the way they animated him just holding her stuff, like, it was, like, the last thing he had of her, and, like, she was never coming back. It's, like, so dramatic. But I love it.
So dumb. So dumb. But whatever it is, Keyleth does manage to do this incredible thing in closing that rift. And in doing so, it turns out she's mastered fire. And it's pretty cool.
Well, she's completed the, I guess it's like a trial, or she's, like,
the trial of
proven her mastery. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Oh my god, it's incredible, actually. I love that. But the funniest thing, go ahead.
I think we were both waiting for the same thing. Is, like, right after that, there's, like, a bit where her dad meets, like, the rest of Vox Machina.
Yes.
And then he's, like, singling out Vax, and he's like, "Take care of each other, especially that one."
And they're both, like,
they're both blushing and avoiding eye contact, and it's like, you guys are not subtle. You're adorable, but you're not subtle.
They're
at
not
all.
Subtle. Please stop it.
But also, like, I will say that, like, and this is just probably just, like, me, but there was something really nice about seeing, like, even though they had, like, this confession in season one that didn't kind of end up in them like getting together then, it doesn't like take away how much they care about each other and how they still like continue to look after each other in season two. So I just thought that was really cute.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool things happening this episode, especially with regard to Keyleth and her Aramente, but the ending was also fairly, like, I don't want to say cliffhangery, because
not really.
The next episode is kind of explains more, but the last bit was also really interesting because we see Anna Ripley, who we hadn't seen since the end of season one.
Yeah.
And she's in Westrun with Umbrasil, one of the members of the Chroma Conclave, and she seems to have what can only be described as a nefarious plan. And she's looking to make bargains, and this is also just a really weird comparison, but when I first saw the scene, in a weird way, you know what it reminded me of? This is referencing another show that you and I both love very, very much, but in a weird way, it kind of reminded me of season five of She-Ra, when Catra's trying to bargain with Horde Prime and like trying to make herself useful so that, you know, nothing bad happens to her. Obviously, that's a very different scenario than what Anna Ripley's doing, but just given everything going on, it kind of gave me that vibe of like, she knows that she's safe as long as she's useful, and this is just, you know, a way for her to buy some time for herself until she can kind of like, you know, do her thing. So in a weird way, that's what that reminded me of. But yeah, it was really interesting because, again, we hadn't seen her since season one, and now you see her and she's just like it's very, I think, striking
like
the way
biding
she
her
deals with,
time. Yeah.
yeah, but also just like, again, kind of striking the way she interacts with Umbrasil compared to like the rest of the world, pretty much, because every time like he's on screen, usually there's people running and screaming, or if they're not running and screaming, it's because they're trying to save their lives by bargaining or giving him something. And she's kind of the same, but she doesn't have like quite the same like
fear.
Yeah, almost. Like, I think maybe if she does have it, she's very good at like masking it and like not showing that she's afraid. But she just kind of calmly marches up to Umbrasil and it's like, look, like, you and I need to talk type thing. And it's like, I don't know how many people would do that. But I think it's also, again, part of it is like she's trying to buy her safety almost. And then also just kind of keep doing her like scheming in any way she can. So that part was interesting. And then also we get to see Goliath's like Grog for the first time in a bit. And we see them kind of giving Umbrasil gold and things. And there's like a very brief but very interesting exchange where I think you find out later, but it's Grog's cousin Zanror who's saying that like the Herd of Storms will keep paying tribute for now. And then Umbrasil is like, no, for always. And then he launches into the whole spiel about, you know, the Chroma Conclave and how they're going to rule everything and all of that. But that too is also just very interesting because it's like most people, again, are running and screaming every time they see dragons. And the Goliaths are kind of, I don't want to say unfazed, but they're definitely, I think, like, they're not concerned enough to avoid making threats. If
Yeah,
that makes any sense. Like, they're just
I
like, we're gonna keep
absolutely
doing this
agree.
for now. But the way they're talking, it like implies that this is not gonna be a long-term arrangement, and they're okay with, or like they're confident enough in their skills at least to like break it if they really want to, which again is like very different than how most of like the random citizens you see on screen react, because usually when the dragons are on screen, it's just like everybody's running and screaming and it's very chaotic. But I think between Anna Ripley and the little bit you see of like the inhabitants of Westron, it's like not everybody's entirely, I don't want to say they're not scared, but I think they're better at masking their fear than
They're biding
probably
their time,
the
it more
average
seems
citizen.
like.
That too, yeah. But
Also,
it's also
let's
like
go ahead.
Umbrasil is, no, I was just going to say Umbrasil is like pretty daunting foe because he's got some skills that are not particularly great if you're facing off against a dragon. And also he just shoots acid, so it's like, that's, I don't know.
I definitely agree. But let's also talk about the Xanror's voice, because I mean, you were right when you said there's a lot of cool people in the voice cast, including Xanror's voice, who is voiced by none other than Abubakar Salim, who is, oh my god, Bayek in Assassin's Creed Origins. And I love his performance in that game. It's just absolutely stunning. Like, I cannot say that enough.
Like, that's the really funny thing. Like, watching the show, I was like, that voice sounds familiar.
Yeah.
But I know I heard it the way Xanra is speaking.
Yes,
and it
exactly.
Took me like a minute, and I was like, that's Bayek speaking.
That's Bayek. Yeah.
And yeah, sure enough it was. But yeah, I mean, I can geek out about like the cast of a lot of shows for eternity if you let me. So
yep.
I'll try not to do it in the interest of time here. But the cast is amazing, and I'm always in awe of like voice actors and like just the amount of things they're able to do just by like using their normal voice, if that makes any sense. And yeah, no, it was really cool. Like, even though Xanor is like a minor character in that he doesn't get a ton of screen time, he does appear more later towards the end of season two. But all things considered, he's like a minor slash background character
for now, but yeah,
for now, yeah. But it was still really cool to know that it was like, that's by XPA.
That is,
like you said,
that's
like
him.
We've spent hours just like screaming about how awesome Bayek is, and like what an amazing performance. Like you get to like experience through him.
Oh,
and so yeah,
right from
just
the
getting
beginning, right from the
oh my
beginning
god,
of that
really.
game, like, it's iconic. One of the most iconic scenes in the franchise. Like, when you hear him say sleep, I never sleep. That is like, I just wait
Yeah.
in the shadows. Like, oh my god. Dude. Just, yeah. You know what? It's super cool. It's just cool. We're just going to be geeking out about this at this point. But yeah, because the whole Goliath arc comes back at a later time, but the reason I mentioned this is because Grog is having these nightmares because of the Craven Edge, where he's like unwittingly slaughtering the rest of Vox Machina. And these are people he cares about. Like, regardless of how blunt he might be at times, he's still a very caring person. He loves his friends. He wants them all to be safe. And the fact that he's having this problem worries him. And I think, I don't know if it's in this episode or the next, he and Pike have this conversation now, because in the first season, it was him asking Pike, what if I need you? And then, but now it's turned around, and I kind of, you feel that, you know? So
yeah.
let's talk about that. And then let's talk about where this group is going next, because they have a clue as to where the next vestige is. So let's talk about all of that.
Yeah, I mean, at least with regard to like Pike and Grog, that like, one, their friendship is just so wholesome. I love it. And Grog is like, he has his moments sometimes where he just does some kind of dumb stuff, but he's so wholesome. And like, at the end of the day, he loves his friends, he cares about them, and obviously, like you said, he doesn't want to hurt them. But yeah, the whole Craven Edge thing is very concerning. And it was really sweet to kind of see the callback to season one when they were talking about like Pike splitting off from the group, and Grog's like, well, what if I need you? But yeah, that conversation happens, I think, later in season two. But like, you get like kind of like moments leading up to that in these episodes. And it's just like really wholesome to see. And like, Pike is also, you know, obviously concerned and I think wary of what Craven Edge could potentially do to Grog,
due
even
to
though she
him,
doesn't know the
yes.
full extent of like what it is doing and what it did to Silas. And I think Silas was also unique in the sense he wasn't exactly living
No, but I think
music.
he took the
So,
blade for what it was, and he liked using it for what it was. But that's not Grog. There's the
right.
difference here. Yeah.
I think that's part of it too, definitely. But yeah, I mean, it, like, we kind of saw a little bit of it in Pass Through Fire when Grog was like cutting down the fire demons,
Yeah.
and like they, I mean, he says that he's like, they don't have any blood, so like, what is he gonna do? And then
It's
like,
not
that's when
feeding the
you,
blade. Yeah, exactly.
right? And like, that's when you start realizing that like, it's not just as simple as like telling the blade to shut up, because this thing, like, it's sentient, but it's got some sort of like ability or whatever. And then like, over the course of like the next couple of episodes, you start seeing like more and more of what the blade could kind of, in a way, almost like force Grog to do. And I think that's very concerning to him, especially because obviously he doesn't want to hurt his friends like that, and
No.
he doesn't want to be the reason they all die. But Craven Edge is also just kind of like, you give me blood or like, we're gonna do this the hard way.
Yeah,
And so
exactly.
for Grog, in like these two episodes at least, he's like really trying his best to like get Craven Edge some sustenance, for lack of a better term. But it's like, the more he holds on to that sword, the more I think, I mean, I know that I was definitely like in the same boat as Pike. I was like, just get rid of that thing, it's not good news, like you don't need it. But also I think like he's kind of been in like this weird headspace of like I think trying to prove himself, for lack of a better term.
Like,
And
where is his
like, I think,
strength coming from and all those things? Yeah.
yeah, and I think like for his friends, obviously, like, but like the rest of Vox Machina doesn't really need him to prove anything to them. But
Yeah.
I think like part of it is that Grog wants to, and I think he wants to prove it to himself too. So it's just,
There's a
it's a
reason
very,
for that, and we'll get to it, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
yeah, but it's just like, it's like a very interesting sort of situation that he's in, where it's like, he thinks like this weapon is what makes him stronger, and I think we all know that it's like bad news, and it's like you should just get rid of it, like just toss it or like break it, do something. But he's, I think, just focused on, this sword is going to make me strong, so whatever I can do to keep it, I'll do it. And I think that's where Pike comes in, is like very concerned, because she knows that Grog is capable, and it's not necessarily the sword that made him strong. Like, his strength has never come from the sword, and he's been strong before the sword. But now, you know, he's like so kind of fixated on the sword that I think she's just like, well, this is concerning.
Absolutely. So let's also talk about this whole situation where this is where the whole, you find one vestige and it gives you the clue to where the next one is, comes into play. And I really like how they did this, because he has this because now Vax has the Deathwalker's ward. He has that armor, and it's giving him visions. It's showing him where the next one might be. And from what we can see, it is with Osisa's mate. He has the option to find out as to what they have a way of finding out exactly where to go to get it. And that's what they're going to do. So let's talk about that, and let's talk about how they get to Osisa's mate, and how they find a way to get the vestige from him. It's an interesting thing. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, like you said, it was really cool the way they made the vestiges kind of linked, in the sense like having one can lead you to others, because there's a lot, and like they all do different things, they're all equally important. But yeah, I mean, they're just kind of like scattered throughout Exandria, so it's like finding one or finding any could be like a needle in a haystack. But this way, at least having one is kind of like a compass that can guide you to others, and like you know, you can kind of Pokemon style collect them all. So that part was really cool. But yeah, they find out that one of the vestiges is held by Osisa's mate in Rhymecleft, which is like in the same mountain region, I think, as Pyra. Although Pyra is like a very different climate, which I thought was kind of fascinating, but neither here nor there. But yeah, I mean, getting to Rhymecleft is really interesting because it's hidden. But because Vex has the broom and she can fly, she can kind of figure out where the hidden entrance is. And then once they get in and they meet Osisa's mate, Kamal Jiori, that encounter is also very interesting because he gives them sort of like typical Sphinx style. He's like, here's a puzzle or like a test. And if you pass, then I'll give you whatever
I'll
you want.
I'll give you whatever you want. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And, he, I think, says like, they have to fight 700 Gorgons or something, or they
or
can
wound
fight
him
and wound him, and then if they succeed, he'll answer their questions or give them any information they seek. And I think as viewers, you kind of, if you know anything about Sphinx, it's like, take the one that seems harder, because the easy sounding one is probably a trap or there's probably a catch somewhere. So it's like, fight the 700 Gorgons or the 7 Gorgons or whatever they were. And it's like that, you know, at least you just mow through them and then you're done. And wounding him, it's like, it sounds like it should be easy, but if he's offering it, there's probably a catch.
There is, and there is.
Yeah, sure enough, there is. And it's like, it was fun watching them for like 2 minutes, and it's like, nope, everybody's just failing. So,
everyone just fails in 2 minutes. And again, this is what I like about this show, because everyone has a chance to shine, right? Because it was Keyleth's turn to shine in the last episode, so that was her thing. And it was Vax's turn to shine when it came to getting the Deathwalker's ward. But now it's Scanlan's turn to shine, because he knows exactly how to wound Kamal Jiori. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think actually what's interesting is that he doesn't really, like, I mean, he gets an idea, but there's no guarantee it's going to work. But he's also, I think, very good at just, like, coming up with kind of, it should be like a harebrained scheme, but it actually isn't, because it works and it works well. Like, he just, it's something about like when it counts, like he delivers, and that's really cool. But also, like, he's one of those characters who's like, I think he like puts up almost like a facade, and it's like, that's not who he is 100% of the time. Like, you know, he comes across a certain way, but behind it, I mean, he says as much in this episode that he's been trying to like find, you know, someone to like be with himself and like make a real
sorry, that's the song that reminds me of. Anyway,
no, I mean, that's kind of what it's like. I mean, it's literally like he's just like, he talks about like wanting to make a real connection and like wanting to have that experience with somebody, but being afraid that he's just not. And I think part of the reason why his plan works better than others is because he's not trying to like, I mean, it, in a way, it's like he's trying to physically wound Kamal Jiori, but it was also like he was wounding him emotionally, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think that was also like a really clever way, because Kamal Jiori also never specified, like, he never
how
said
do you wound him? Yeah, there was no specification. But it is interesting, because in doing so, Scanlan does get Mythcarver, which is again a vestige, a sword, but a vestige. And it shows him visions of two other vestiges. Or one. I can't remember.
One? I think there are two. So there's Fenders, the bow, which is in the Fey realm, and then there's the gauntlets.
Oh, yes! Yes! You are absolutely right.
Westren.
Which are in Westren. And here's the thing. Grog, at the mention of these gauntlets, gets all tense. But then... they don't have much time to dwell on this, because unfortunately they're interrupted by Umbrasyl himself. Because believe it or not, even after Thordak told him, don't go after the vestiges, we just want to make sure that we go through with our plan, he's like, no, I want these vestiges. And he comes in, he comes bursting in to get it, to get Myth Carver and the other vestiges from this group. So let's talk about that and how that ends up.
Yeah, I mean, Umbrasyl's entrance, like, I think in the beginning of the episode, you actually do see him kind of, like, trailing them. So mm-hmm. I think he knows where they're going, so it's not, like, a huge shock that he pops up there. The weird thing, though, is I think at this point, he only really goes after Myth Carver, I think, if I remember correctly. He doesn't really try and take, like, the Deathwalker's ward, which at this point would involve taking Vax himself, because, like, that thing is glued onto him.
Yeah.
Coming off.
They're attached at this point, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that part was interesting, but also I think maybe he, I don't know if he knew that Vax had a vestige at that point.
No.
Or if he had, I think he was more focused, I think, on Myth Carver, because it was more accessible.
Because it was something that he could take. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, he could take Vax too, like, in the sense he could literally just pick him up and carry him away if he mm-hmm. really wanted to, I think. I mean, it would take some work on Umbrasyl's part, because, like, Vax wouldn't just, he wouldn't just go willingly. But he doesn't focus on Vax or the Deathwalker's ward that much in this episode. It's more, I think, trying to get to Myth Carver, and then when Kamal Jury kind of enters the fray, then a lot of it is just, like, trying to keep him away and, you know, neutralize him mm-hmm. while, you know, getting Myth Carver. I don't want to say it's a lucky escape for them, because, I mean, some part of it isn't luck, some part of it is their skill, but in other ways it is also they got lucky that they were able to escape, because once Umbrasyl enters the scene,
yep.
and they're all fighting him, they, like, there's a moment, I think, where they're all thinking, okay, it's one dragon, we've taken on a dragon before, you know, he's away from the rest of the Chroma Conclave, if we're gonna do anything, now's our chance. But Umbrasyl is still pretty powerful.
Yep.
And I think the more they fight, the more kind of frustrated I think Grog is getting. And so when Craven Edge starts influencing him, you kind of see his nightmare play out, where he just becomes so
enraged, like,
frenzied. And
Mm-hmm.
And Craven Edge is kind of feeding off of that, and feeding that too in a way that you kind of see him go dark, almost, for lack of a better term.
Yep.
Like, he just is full, mm-hmm. like, bloodlust, almost, like,
yep.
And Craven Edge is also just, like, having the time of its life, like,
it's enjoying this, absolutely.
But then, like, the problem also is, like, Vox Machina is trying to get away, and Grog is just, like, so in this, like, frenzied state of, like, mm-hmm. I have to take him down, or, like, I want to take him down, I want to make him bleed, that he's not leaving Umbrasyl alone, he's not stepping back. And then you have that scene where Pike is, like, trying to stop him, and, like,
she gets impaled.
Get him to,
yeah, which is horrifying. Like, and then wakes him up, it wakes Grog up like that, and he's like, oh no, what have I done, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a, like, fairly horrific scene, especially when you think about, like,
it is.
I think of all of them, like, Grog and Pike are probably, so, like, amongst all of Vox Machina, he's probably the closest with Pike. And, mm-hmm. like, their friendship is super wholesome, and it's always
it
been,
is,
like,
wholesome,
you know,
yeah.
Very, like, I don't know how to describe it. It's always been really, like, enjoyable to watch, but this is, like, a really hard moment to watch, because I don't think there's ever a scenario in which Grog would willingly want to hurt her, but mm-hmm. in this moment, it's not entirely, like, him, where he's not thinking straight. So it's a fairly, like, graphic moment to watch. And then, like, Ashley Johnson is a whole other story.
Yep.
Like, her, like, the way she just, like, did that scene was, I mean, it was amazing, but it's also, like, thanks, we did not need that.
No. We didn't need our feelings anyway. Of course not. Why did we? But all through this, Keyleth's been trying to prepare a spell to go to the Fey realm because that's their way out. But unfortunately, the spell is disrupted by Umbrasyl, I think. And only four of them make it to the Fey realm. So let's talk about that and what follows next. Because, again, I love how this show does this. It does a good thing of balancing out these character arcs. Because now it's all going to be about Vex and Vax at this point. So let's talk about that. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, Into Rhymecraft has, like, a really, like, crazy ending. Because, yeah, I mean, like, Keyleth, you know, transporting them from plane to plane is super cool. And it would have worked had Umbrasyl not disrupted the spell.
Yep.
And unfortunately, because he did, Grog, Scanlan, and Pike end up elsewhere.
Yep.
And then Vex, Vax, Percy, and Keyleth end up in the Fey realm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... Yeah, I mean, it's just like of all the moments for them to split up, this is not one where they should
know,
be split up.
Definitely.
Pike has always been kind of like their default healer, but beyond that, I think the only other person who probably could have managed any healing spell would have been Keyleth, and like Pike desperately needs healing at this point. And I don't like. I mean, she could like technically heal herself, which she attempts to do, but it's like.
It drains her.
Like, I mean, I'm not even thinking in terms of like energy and like that being drained, just in terms of like the ordeal she just went through. Like, I mean, how would you even have like the strength to do that? Like,
no, it's difficult, like you
I'm
said.
Like,
yep.
Yeah. So, I would imagine that, like, if at all, they could have used any of Keyleth's healing abilities. Like, I mean, I know she said she's not a healer like Pike, but, I think like this would have been the episode they could have used any of her abilities as far as like healing goes, but because they're split up, Pike and Scanlan are still with Grog, who's still kind of in this like weird sort of state where he's like horrified at what he's done, but then Craven Edge is still trying to influence him and, you know, still
trying to snap out of it.
So like there's that to deal with, and then the other four are just stuck in the Fey realm. And it's I don't know, there's like, again, I love that the show has like these moments of like levity to balance out some of like the heavier things, because watching Grog and like try and resist Craven Edge and prevent himself from like hurting Pike anymore is like a kind of heavy thing to watch. And then you immediately go to the Fey realm and it's like Keyleth's having like a breakdown because she's like, oh my god,
I ruined the spell, what's gonna happen? And I love how Vax is just like, calm down, it's okay.
I know, that was really sweet. Like, Percy was like freaking out in the background, like, what do you mean you don't know? How can you not know? And then Vex is like, just breathe, just tell us what happened and we'll figure it out. And then there's also like, he and Vex have this really sweet moment where he's like, at least we're still together. And it's like, yeah, but you guys are also just stuck in like a very weird place, and I don't know that you're gonna like the next like 30 minutes or so. Everything that happens, poor Vex is having a horrible day.
Yes, but that's because Kiki's having a horrible day, okay?
That too. Some part of it is probably that too. But yeah, I mean, it is like, I will say, like, not always easy to do when you have such a large group of main characters, like, to split up the team and then to devote enough time to, like, the different groups. And especially with a show that has, like, a limited runtime, like, season two is all, it's the same 12 episode length that season one was, but they're dealing with probably a little bit more than season one.
Yeah,
because season
yes.
two is like every character gets their own arc, like their own mini arc.
Yeah.
And then there's the overarching arc of like the Chroma Conclave. So there's a lot to deal with, but like I think the show balances it really well because it's like you get more on Pike and Scanlan and Grog Yep. Throughout this next couple of episodes, and then episodes 7 and 8 are really kind of, like you said, Vex and Vax centric and focus a lot on like their journey through the Fae Realm, which is a very weird and interesting place, but I absolutely loved it.
I do too, because there's a very good reason for it. Because okay, so we got glimpses into Vex and Vax's childhood in the earlier episode where they were mistreated by their father. But this is where it comes to a head. Like, literally, it comes to a head here. So let's talk about that. And let's talk about the idiocy that Percy involves himself in, because, and I say this out of love, because let's just talk about that, okay? There's a lot going on with these idiots right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, even before, like, they get to all of that, it's just, like, them navigating the Fae Realm was so entertaining and so amusing, just because, like, it's almost like it's like the type of place you would think would be out to like get you, but it's like in a like less deadly way. Like, it just messes with your mind at first, and then like for Vax specifically, it starts getting like annoying very early on, because it's like the whole place reacts to him, kind of doesn't seem to want him there. Things are like hostile towards him specifically, but then to everybody else it's like they're okay. But yeah, watching them navigate the Fae Realm was really funny. There's also that's the 207 is the episode where they meet Garmili, who's just like this like the funniest sort of character you could imagine in the Fae Realm, and who's got some very interesting hobbies that are not exactly safe for work, but also kind of, I don't know if it was like done intentionally to like highlight what fandom is sometimes like, or if it was just like a nod to something else in campaign one, but watching them react to Garmili's like drawings and stuff was really funny. And the way Percy was just constantly like, oh, we don't need him, I'll navigate us through the Fae Realm, I know everything, I studied it. And then it's like he has no idea what he's doing, plus
no. But let's
but yeah, it,
go ahead.
Like, no, I was just gonna say, like, eventually they do get to where they need to go, according to Garmili, which is Singorn, which has conveniently teleported into the Fae Realm instead of wherever it was supposed to be on Teldor. So
let's talk about that, because it takes us on a journey with these with Vex and Vax, because there's a lot going on with this here. So again, Sildor is not exactly a good person. So let's talk about that and his reaction to seeing his kids again, and how Vex is still craving his approval, even though she doesn't really want to, because that's complicated. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, it is very nuanced. And yeah, Sildor is a piece of garbage. He can go die in a hole. I'm always like surprised. Well, I don't know if so. Vex and Vax are technically half elves. Like, I think their mom, she may have been human, but I mean, like during the flashback, I think it was in the Sunken Tomb, that's where you see a flashback of them as like young teenagers with Sildor. And that's the first time like you really get a sense of like what a piece of garbage she is, because he calls them diluted, and it's like, well, you're a jerk, you can go die in a hole because nobody needs a dad like you.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, I mean, I watching that, like, I don't know, like, why would you be a parent, or like, why would you take on the responsibility of parenting kids if you're going to treat them like that? Like, at that point, he could have just like left them to their own devices, because he wasn't doing anything for them anyway. But for some reason, he took them in and then proceeded to be a jerk until they ran away. And now they've come back, and it's like nothing has changed for him. He's still just like condescending and still just as rude. And they didn't show it in the animated show. And I don't know that this was a thing in the campaign, but I would have loved if, like, even before, like, what follows, like, happens, if Percy had just pulled his, like, I'm Percival, you know, his whole full name, Lord of Whitestone thing, and then, like, I know technically Keyleth wasn't the voice of the Tempest yet when she met Sildur, but if she just pulled that card, I would have loved, like, a scene where he was, like, groveling at their feet, because...
That's what he deserves, jackass.
Yeah. But yeah, it to me, it's always just, like, so weird that he's, like, he took in Vex and Vax after they, like, I think after their mother died. Or at any rate, he took them in at some point. And it's, like, he just spent the rest of their time in Syngorm just being condescending, just being rude, being, like, as much of a jerk of a father as he could be. And it's, like, why did you take them in the first place? Like, they were living in Byroden, which I think geographically was not very close. So he could have just left them there, like, if he didn't care. I'm always just like, why didn't you just leave them there? But yeah, it's kind of, like, nice, and I mean this sarcastically, to see that after all these years, nothing has changed. And he's still just a jerk as he was when they were kids.
But let's talk about something else here, because now they have a little sister, a little half-sister, who is adorable. And I love how Vex and Vax see this little kid and they're like, okay, hey, we're here, let's have some fun. It's really sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, that's the other thing, too. It's, like, for all their faults, and I think, like, they're all, like, they've admitted that, you know, they're not perfect, and I think they know that, and, like, they're not trying to act like they are perfect, but I love that they just take to the Lorca so quickly.
Absolutely, I agree. It's interesting to see how this plays out now, because even after all this time, like you said, he's still the little jerk that he's always been to his kids. And that's just sad to see. And it's, what's worse is Vex really feels that still. Vax is, like, past his breaking point with this dude. He's like, forget it, man. I don't even care about you. But Vex, for whatever reason, is still attached. And I can't blame her for that. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the age-old struggle, kind of like trying to find acceptance and, you know, like, this is sort of the stuff that would not be given to kids conditionally by parents, like normal parents.
Yeah.
But with Sildur, it's very weird that it's, like, it's conditional. Like, it's also just depressing when you think about it, because, like, there's nothing that they can do about that, because, I mean, it just seems like he hates them because they're not, like, pure bloods, for lack of a better term.
Who asked you to go sleep around with someone else, you jackass?
That too. Sorry. Like, they're not gonna That's never gonna change.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's weird that he was so, like...
That he's hung up on that.
Yeah, about something that, again, is never gonna be changed. Like, it is what it is. That's the way, like, they are, and that's the way it's gonna be. And it's stupid to complain about it and then expect that they could do something about it when, like, I mean, it's like almost like changing your blood type, like, literally, which is impossible.
You can.
Even in that, like, fantasy world, they can't change who they are, and they are not going to change who they are, and they shouldn't have to, honestly. But I do also find it really interesting that, like, I know the episode or the show has time constraints, but it's like, even in that short period of time, Sildur never interacts with Ballora either. And again, I know, like, there's time constraints. The show maybe can't devote time to that, but it's like, they're technically in the same household. They're on screen together for, like, a split second. But he never once mentions Ballora to them. He never once mentions, technically, I guess, Tivana's their stepmother.
Yeah.
But he never mentions her either. And it's like, what, like, I have so many questions for him. Like, his whole mentality and, like, the way he's treating, the way he's treated that, like, Vex and Max, and now with such a young child in his household, I'm like, what are you doing to that poor girl? Like, are you doing anything? Are you being nicer to her? And if
yeah,
so,
exactly.
Why couldn't you be that way to Vex and Max? Because, again, they can't control, like, they can't control their blood type. They can't control who their mom is. They can't control who their dad is. And if that was such a big issue for you, like you said, he shouldn't have been sleeping around with the people who he didn't, like, deem worthy, which is, again, such a, like, icky thing to think about. But
it is. And if, yeah, that's like can of worms that we don't, that I don't know how to explain this, but
it
you know
shouldn't
what
be
this reminds me of?
opening it.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me of? How much of The Good Place have you watched?
I haven't finished it. I've got through partway through season 4, I think.
Okay. Because there's props to Kristen Bell for this, because I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent here, right? Because her character, Eleanor, has not had the best life, right? Her mom was an absentee parent. She didn't care too much about her kid. Maybe she didn't want to have this kid, or maybe she was always a terrible parent. But after a few years, and she broke off all ties with her mother because of this, and which is valid, because that was a toxic relationship for her and she did not want to be a part of it. But when she sees her again, she sees her with this new kid, and she's great with this new kid, and it angers her so much. And when Michael asks her, why is this angering you so much? You're grown up. You have your life now. She basically said that, I love how they put it in the story. She was like, if she's good now, that means she was always capable of being good, or and she was always capable of change, and that I wasn't worth that change for her. So that hurt. Listening to that, that's what this feels like. That's the situation here. If Sildor is a good parent to this new kid, Melora. Melora, I'm sorry if I mispronounced her name. Is it Melora?
No, it's Melora. It's like she's like goddess Melora with a V.
Yeah, sorry. But so that's what this reminds me of. If he's a good parent to this kid, he was always capable of being a good parent, but he didn't think that these two kids were worth that change. And that is actually worse. So, you know, it stings.
It does, yeah. I mean, my messed up brain, because you know what I think about a lot. When I saw this, I was thinking, it's not an equivalent, and it's just, again, my messed up brain, because my brain works in weird ways. But I was thinking, like, season 3 of She-Ra when Shadow
Weaver oh lord
the Horde and goes
we
to the
need
rebellion.
To talk about that more, like, I know we've talked about it extensively off recording, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and like Catra's reaction to that, it's not equivalent,
it's
not a
not
one-to-one, like,
but it's visceral
anyway,
and
but,
I love that.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly, I know what you mean.
And
exactly.
It's different because, like, obviously Vex doesn't have that sort of same reaction that Catra did to realizing that her dad is capable of not only fathering another kid, but, like,
being a
apparently
good
being a
parent.
decent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, it has to sting because it's, like, they did nothing wrong. I mean,
No.
We, like, the flashback where she breaks the thing, like, the crown or whatever, that's whatever. But in terms of, like, just existing, like, they can't control their blood type. They can't control their heritage
And
or
the
what, or,
kids,
like,
they're
lineage.
supposed to
Like,
be messy. They're supposed to be little shits. That's what they're for. Like,
I mean, it's just, like, weird that he's so fixated on, like, their blood
lineage
type, for
or
lack of a
whatever.
better
Yeah,
word. Yeah, it's
whatever.
like, they can't control that. And again, if you didn't want to be stuck with half elven kids, why did you go around sleeping with people who you didn't think were worthy enough? Like, again, it's a can of worms, and he absolutely should not be thinking like that. But, like,
Yeah, I know what you mean.
on the off chance he has, like, some weird sort of mindset about, like, that, I mean, that was in his control. Nobody forced him to sleep with Elena. So, like, why didn't you just, or at least actually, I don't know if anybody did, but I'm assuming that nobody did. Like, why didn't you just, I don't know, sleep with somebody
Not
else if
sleep
that
with
was like
her.
an issue?
Yeah.
That too, really. I mean, people like him, I mean, if you're gonna have a kid or multiple kids, whether it's an accident or by choice, you better be committed to like taking care of them and putting in the work, because there's absolutely no excuse that, like, you can't have kids and then just be like, okay, I don't want you part of my life anymore, and then just take them when it's convenient, but then still be like a dick. Like,
Exactly. So dumb. It angers me. Yeah, it's like abuse of the worst kind. I mean, I shouldn't say it like that. There's no good version of abuse, to be honest with you. But
no.
It's just, this is someone who is dependent on you, right?
When they were
If
younger,
it
yeah.
was a friend or someone else in your family who is your age and who's just with you at that point, at least there's no dependence. At least not to this degree. These are your kids. They have nowhere else to go. There is a power imbalance here. You have to understand
Yeah.
that. And he's taking full advantage of this, and I hate it. I just hate it.
Yeah, you know what I would love, which I don't think would ever happen, or maybe it has happened and I just don't know, but I would love, because Vax is now a champion of the Raven Queen, I would, and like his thing is supposed to be kind of like a shepherd of like souls and stuff like that. If when Sildor dies, if Vax is the one who's like supposed to escort him, and Vax is just like, welcome to hell.
Bye!
Yeah,
I know
I
exactly
mean,
what you mean.
Every time Sildor is on screen, he's just got like such a like punchable looking face, and I'm
Oh
like,
yeah,
somebody should absolutely just like,
I would. I trust me, I would love to. He
I think
deserves
I
it.
would love to have seen, like, this obviously didn't happen, and I don't think it happened in campaign one either, but I would have loved to see like Percy and Keyleth just go feral and just be like, if they're not gonna do it, we'll do it on their behalf.
Yeah, we will. You might be too kind to say something, or you might be too attached, but we're not. We're
Yeah.
not.
And I think for Vex and Vax, both of them would, at this point, they'd do anything. So
Oh, yeah.
I would love
They
it.
would.
Like, if we got a scene like that where it's just
We're
like
going to
them.
talk about some stupid shit that Percy pulls here, okay? We're going to talk about it. Let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too, that, like, he just gave her a fake title. I mean, fake title isn't like it exists, but like, I guess at this point, given the current state of Whitestone, it doesn't really mean much just yet. And I love that, like, he just does it. Like, there's no like, well, should I not? Like, how is she gonna perceive this? It's just like kind of spur of the moment type thing. He just like blurts it out. He's like, it's Lady Vex'ahlia. And the best
And
part
Vex is
for
just
me,
like,
I know, she's just like, for a second, like, you can kind of see her processing, but I think the best part for me is that Sildor can totally see through it, and I think he realizes that Percy just kind of made it up on the
made it up,
spot, but he's like, oh, this is beneath you or whatever, and then but he never takes it back. He's just like, I don't care if it's made up, or I don't care if he knows, it is, but like, I
but
said what I said,
it's a
and like,
title. I
it's law.
did it. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's
Which is
so
also though,
dumb.
like, I don't know, I'm very curious about like how that works, because technically Cassandra is leading Whitestone or like ruling, so like, is she supposed to have a say in it? Does she care? Does she not care?
Well, considering he's also part of the Dorolo family, it might mean something. And
I mean,
if her brother asks, she's gonna be like, yeah, you know what? Okay, fine.
right, but I'm just thinking, like, in terms of like, you can't just, or I would imagine it's not as simple as just being like, here's a piece of paper that says you are now a baroness or whatever, or like a lady, whatever. I would imagine there's a lot of like process involved, but
Protocol.
yeah. But he just like whips out a piece of paper and he's like, are you saying, like, he doesn't like have any proof. He's just like, you need to correct this because it's not
That's
like
not
you
right.
misspelled her name. And then Sildor is like, I will not be correcting it. And it's like, well, nobody cares whether or not you correct it, because it's already done, and that's like a thing for the rest of like eternity now. Like Percy said,
that's it.
So it's true.
It's true. And also he gives her an arrowhead, which is so sweet. He's so dumb and I hate him for it, which means I love it. Give me more of this, please. Thank you.
I know. Yeah, there's just so many things, like even like the little things, like when they were going to Rhymecleft and like Vex is complaining about being cold and then Percy just gives her his coat and he's like,
fine.
I'm fine, I don't need it. And then yeah, like the giving her like the siege arrow too, and like that whole scene was just really sweet
because
obviously
he
you can
asked,
tell.
really, do you think I really look like royalty? He's like, that doesn't mean anything. You just act like shit and boss people around. I've met thousands of royals worth half of you. So I love that.
Yeah, that was like earlier in the episode, but yeah, there was that. And there's also like when he tells her after they leave Singorn and like they're back in the Feywilds, there's the whole bit where he's just like telling her about how he's like, oh, you have a pure heart and it's so special. And it's just like, you guys just like get your act together and like do something about your feelings, like when there's time, obviously, like not right now,
It
but
reminds
like
me of another confession we'll talk about later, okay? It's fine. It's really fine. Okay? It's fine. We're fine. But yes, they do venture into the Feywilds, and something very sinister is waiting for them there. Let's talk about that, because how this plays out is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I actually don't know that they'd ever mentioned Archfey before, or even just like Fey in general. I think season two is probably the first time you get like any sort of mention of the Fey realm or Fey folk or whatever they're called in general. But yeah, it was really interesting because we get to see, I guess, like a darker version. And also, I think, especially for me, because I haven't played D&D, and
I
Critical
haven't
Role was
either.
really kind of like my first exposure to
Same,
like
same.
D&D and like the D&D setting. And also my first foray into Critical Role was Exandria Unlimited, which I think if you watch that, I had like a very specific idea of what I thought the Feywild would be like and what beings from the Fey realm would be
Oh,
like, and that
really?
entirely just based on Fern.
Okay.
Well, yeah, because Fern was like my
Oh,
only
Fern!
reference. Yeah.
Yes!
Until I started, you know, catching up on other things and like getting bits and pieces of like other campaigns and stuff like that. But prior to the show, EXE was really like my only reference point for a lot of things. And so yeah, I'd always just kind of assumed that like people from the Fey realm would kind of be like Fern, not that they would all be fawns, but like they just, you know, kind of dress like her, maybe act like her. And to a certain extent, I think you can kind of see that. But they're also very different. And there's obviously more than just fawn druids and stuff like that in the Fey realm. And Sondor is a good example because he is creepy as hell. Just because, like, not even so much his design. Actually, I think his design was really cool, but there's something almost like predatory about him.
Yes.
And like that was creepy to watch. The way he was just kind of like, "Oh, Vex'ahlia, you're attracted to me," and it's like, "No, she's not. You just like,
you're
I don't
being
know. It's like a
creepy.
sickness."
Shut up. But it does kind of work on her, because all she wants is acceptance, and he plays on that. And it's just what snaps her out of it, and I love this, is when he says, all you have to do is give me your heart. It clears her head, and she's like, my heart is someone else's. I love it. I love that so much. It's so crazy. Idiots, idiots. And the look on Percy's face.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, like Percy's reaction to that, and also just like the way he's just like, I wonder who could she could be talking about, and it's like, you're a genius, use your brain.
Get your act together. Come on, Percy.
Parts,
get your act together. Okay.
It's equal parts endearing and frustrating when it's like they're just dancing around each other's feelings. But then it's also like, part of me is actually like, I like the way that they're kind of showcasing it. Because like for all of these characters, it's like, even if they're feeling attraction on any level to another member of the party, it's like, even if they're hesitant to act on it or reluctant to act on it or just not acknowledging it or whatever the case may be, it doesn't change anything else about like their friendship, and they're always going to
prioritize
their friendship first. And yeah, it's really refreshing because like I think also it would be very easy to be like, here's two characters who come together, try and reach an understanding, and then don't, and then they just spend like the rest of the season avoiding each other, just having like these awkward like moments. And it's like there's some of that in the show or in the season, but like yeah, it's
we'll talk about that too in a bit. Common. It's fine.
But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's just nice to see that like even though a lot of these characters have like maybe tried to make more personal connections, more lasting connections, whatever you want to call it. And even if they got like kind of rejected or they didn't quite get the answer they were hoping for, it doesn't really stop them from like doing what they do best, which is, you know, like going out, like causing chaos and mayhem. So just like cleaning things up and fixing things, and then just like being really wholesome as well. So like that aspect of it I really like, that especially like because I think the one thing that I always like was kind of afraid of when they I think revealed that the show was like kind of canon, but it was going to like differ obviously from the main campaign, I was like, well, how are they going to do the romance thing, because like that's a huge part of like all the characters arcs, but it could also just play into like really common tropes of like oh, I got rejected and I can never face so and so again, or like they could do like love triangles, which I hate, and stuff like that, and like
war flashbacks
kind of...
but yeah, I know what you mean.
It's like in a way like they kind of like hit some of those tropes but without making them feel quite like they were tropes, and like in a way
without making them cringy. I agree with
you. That's probably a better way to put it. But yeah, it was nicer to see that like whatever these characters were feeling, even if they weren't getting the answer they wanted from others in the group at a certain point in time, they weren't holding it against them, and they weren't like, well, now everything's awkward between us, and like they're still being like really cute and wholesome, which I love.
Which is really great. That's also, but thankfully, they make it out of there with Fenthrus, which is great.
Can we just talk about that action sequence though? Because watching
it was awesome.
Like it was cool.
It is
like that was
the animation, man. It's beautiful.
The animation and like even like the smaller things. Like obviously, like for the second half of that episode, her fight with Sandor was like center stage, and she was so badass. But like even the smaller things, like Percy and Vax and Keyleth fighting those like tree spirits, I don't know what they're called, that was really cool. And I love that like there's like even minor things that like initially I didn't catch the first time, like when they're fighting those tree spirits, there's a bit when Keyleth transforms into like that fire element. I didn't catch the first time, but I think she rips them open with a portal, like the same way she like uses a portal to get them to and from Whitestone. She like does that, but then like she uses that to like rip the trees apart, and I didn't catch it the first time. I was just like, whoa, cool fire.
That's pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
I didn't catch that either. Good catch. Yeah. Oh my god. That's pretty cool.
And I love too that like Vax and Percy were just like, okay, we're just gonna like distract them so she can do her thing.
Yeah, because yeah, she can do it. That's our job now.
Yeah. And I love that it was like, on the one hand, like Vex just taking care of Sandor and just like obliterating him in like the coolest fight ever. And then on the other hand, it was like Keyleth just being a badass fire elemental and like destroying a bunch of tree spirits. And, and then Vex and Percy just looking at her like, what just happened?
What just happened? Did she just confess? Did she like me? Oh my god, what am I supposed to do with this information? What? He's so dumb.
Well, the confession comes much later for all of them, I think.
That's but, a different yeah, but story. The fight,
yeah,
but I know what you mean.
The fight sequences were really cool. And then also, I just love that, like, Vex used the siege arrow that Percy gave her to ultimately, like, defeat Sandor.
And that line, I loved it. And Percy's reaction to it, you dumbass, what did you think she was going to do? What did you think she was going to do? Anyway, it's still really cool. I really enjoyed it. And it's, again, this is a very good example of this show giving each of these characters a chance to shine and not just, you know, and still keeping pace with the bigger story. Like, the bigger story is still get the vestiges, defeat the Chroma Conclave for now. But they still found a way to develop these individual characters and these relationships here by doing stuff like this, which I find really cool. And what I also love is that Garmilly was highly entertained by this and creates a portal back to Sildor, I think.
No, I think they just go back to, I think they're somewhere on Tal'Dorei, but it's before they all regroup at Westruun. Yeah. So Pike, Grog, and Scanlan are they end up with her great grandfather.
Yep.
Her great great grandfather. Yep. I can't remember how many greats, but they end up with him, partly so that like they can kind of recover and so
and
that Grog
regroup.
Can get help.
Yeah, and Grog can get help. Because because Grog, being the wholesome person that he is, has let go of the Craven Edge, but that has sapped him of all his strength because it took his strength, unfortunately. So there's that. So that's something that we're going to have to look into in the next episode, because that's where we're going to leave this. And in the next episode, we are going to the absolutely riveting conclusion to this arc. Because, oh my god, so many cool things happen in these last four episodes, guys. It's like insane how many cool things happen here. And we don't want to spoil you, but if you already watched it, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. If you haven't, please go ahead and watch it. It's available on Amazon Prime. And for every single one of you who has taken the time to listen to us nerd out about this, thank you. We really appreciate you. And we will be back next week with part three and the final part of The Legend of Vox Machina season two. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. As always, our lovely theme song is Water Lily by the 126ers. The Nerdy Podcasts podcast is available on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and you can follow us online at nerdy-podcasts.tumblr.com or at nerdypodcasts.wordpress.com.